What's going on, people? Welcome to Paint Points. As usual, I'm your host, Jade Painting. This podcast is proudly brought to you by the SB Nation Podcast Network and the Tanis Hoopers family. Today, I am joined again by Tanis Hoopers contributor and hashtag basketball draft expert, Tyler Metcalf. Obviously, if you've listened to the show before, and especially during the offseason, you know that Tyler joined me for a lot of the draft previews and the player, you know, deep dives that we got into in the off season to pass the time and to prepare ourselves for the draft. So today we're just going to talk about Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels. Obviously, they are the two Minnesota rookies and the two guys that I want to focus on today and kind of just take a look back at what we've seen. By the time anyone's listening to this, it'll probably be 15 games into the season after the Pelicans game tonight as we're recording. So we obviously don't know the result of that or what Ant and McDaniels did in that game, but we're going to go from the 14 games before that and kind of just get an early check-in at the early returns of those two guys. So, Tyler, how you going, man?
It's going, you know, just taking it game by game here with the Timberwolves. And, you know, I know we should all know better, but it's what we signed up for.
Yeah, it's got to the point where it's almost hard to even find silver linings at the moment. Like, the Atlanta game last night was just another kick in the teeth. So, hopefully, by the time people are listening to this, it's, you know, at least a competitive game against New Orleans tonight. And no D'Angelo Russell for some strange resting reason, but
I guess those 20 minutes were too much for him last night, but I don't know, maybe it's just a mental break. Because God knows we as fans could use it.
Yeah, I think I could use a rest, a day off to rest. unfortunately, we don't. We're going to sit here and talk about the Wolves for an hour or so. So I guess we'll get straight into it. We'll start with Ant. Obviously, McDaniels, the sample size is still very, very small.
Yep.
Edwards, at this point when we're talking, he's averaging 11 points per game, 11.6 points per game. 2.9 rebounds, 1.7 assists, 34% from the field, and 27% from the three-point line. The Wolves are 6.6 points per 100 possessions worse on offense when Ant is out there. Actually, 5.4 points per 100 possessions better on defense when he is out there, which is a bit of a surprise. Just pre-draft, I had him at 2 in my big board. You had him at 4, I believe.
Yeah.
Just going off the hashtag basketball rankings, yep. Which, if I didn't mention, please go and check out all of Tyler's stuff over at hashtag basketball and obviously at Tanis Hoopers. But I'll start with a question for you. I guess I want to start with the defensive end for Ant. I want to start there and then we'll get into the offense a little bit later. Sure. But what have you made of Ant's defense, you know, so far, and where does it sit compared to what you saw heading into draft night?
Early on, there are some flashes of, okay, maybe he's figuring it out. Maybe he's locked in. And when he is locked in as an on-ball defender, you know, we've seen some good stuff. We've seen good effort. But and overall, especially these last couple weeks, and it's just been bad defensively, and he's almost regressed back to where he was at Georgia. His off-ball awareness is brutal right now, and there are multiple clips where you know, his guy just cuts along the baseline to the opposite corner. He's staring at the ball. 3 seconds later, he glances back, his man's gone, and he's doing a full 360 spin trying to figure out where he is. It's been bad defensively, but you know, so is everyone else on this team, and the overall off-ball defensive awareness on this team has been brutal. So it doesn't really seem like there's that veteran who can help him lock in on that end. But you know, I really was hoping for more of a step in the right direction defensively from Edwards, from what he showed at Georgia, because the physical tools are there. The athleticism is there to be an awesome defender. And you know, occasionally we see him lock in, mainly on ball, but you know, that's you know, once, twice a game we see really inspiring stuff from him defensively. And you know, the other, you know, 20 minutes he's on the court, it's just bad.
Yeah. I think I certainly agree with you, and I think that all of his worst attributes that we had issues with and that we spoke about pre-draft that showed themselves at Georgia have kind of just been magnified in the worst way possible. All of those those flaws I had surrounding the off-ball defense, like you said, there was that one last night against Atlanta where I think DeAndre Hunter cut from the top of the key. They'd forced the shot clock low. There was maybe 2 or 3 seconds left on the shot clock. Rajon Rondo had the ball in the corner. The perfect, defensive possession. That's where you want to end a defensive possession, with Rondo shooting a contested three, and then Ant just gets stuck with the worst case of ball watching you could ever imagine. Hunter cuts behind him straight to the rim. I'm pretty sure it ended up as an and one as well. Like, that's the stuff where it's must be maddening for the coaching staff, a coaching staff that's already under a ton of pressure as it is. And then Ant's just those awful ball watching lapses, and he gets sucked in so easily to the ball. He just kind of he just floats towards the ball throughout defensive possession, rather than just staying fixed on his man. And it's effort really with him. Like you said, he's got all the physical tools. He still struggles mightily to get through screens, I think. Like, obviously he's strong and fast enough to do it, and his lateral quickness is really good, but his technique and effort to get skinny and squeeze through those picks is just, he completely falls off there. And that was always my biggest issue at Georgia. Obviously, he has moments as an on-ball defender, as you said, but he still reaches way too much. He wants to make that home run play where he pokes the ball loose rather than just staying solid and moving his feet. And as soon as you reach, he got punished for it at the college level. As soon as you reach at the NBA level against a wing who can score against you easily, it's game over. And I think he has a long way to go to kind of conform to a team defensive plan, and an even longer way before he can actually, improve a team defense. Like, they hide him a lot, I think, as much as they can, obviously, when you have D'Angelo Russell out there and you have Malik Beasley, and, you can't hide everyone all the time. Do you think, like, with the way this season's going, and obviously it's getting to the point pretty quickly where it's slipping away, if it hasn't already slipped away, do you think it's better for Saunders or whatever eventual new head coach to keep stashing him away off the ball and out of harm's way, or do you think just throw him into the frying pan and give him some reps and some film in pick and roll coverage and risk him being burnt consistently?
It's tough because, and you don't want to completely, destroy his confidence on that end, and he doesn't seem like a guy who that's really going to be a big issue for. But you never know.
His confidence is the one thing that I just don't have an issue with. Like, it's not Jarrett Culver, where Culver seems to be like, if you don't coddle him, he kind of goes into his shell. Like, Ant is just like the most kind of out there guy. Even the other night, wasn't the Atlanta game, the game before against Orlando, he's obviously been horrible offensively lately, mm-hmm. and he hit a mid-range jumper, and he was walking up the court, telling people that this is what he does, talking trash. Like, I like that. I think that will lend itself to improvement and to not getting his head down, as much as some other players. But
to that point, I would like to see him get more minutes with, the starters and whatnot, and having to face the better players on the other team and having to be held accountable. He's never, his entire basketball career, he's never been held accountable. He's never really been coached at a high level. He's always just been like given the team and free reign to do whatever he wants, because he's always been the freak athlete. He's always been the best player. And he's not that anymore. There are guys who are way better than him, and he needs to, I think he needs to just kind of keep being thrown into the fire and held accountable. And it's like, hey, you messed up this play and it cost us. Like, you have to fix it. Yeah, you shut down your man's first dribble move, but then he pulled it out and you stood up out of your stance and he blew past you and you lazily reached in and left, you know, Towns or Ed Davis or whoever out to dry in a 2-on-1 or 3-on-2 situation at the rim where they're screwed. And it's because you're too young and not finishing the play out. Like you alluded to in that DeAndre Hunter cut, you know, it's like, no, there are 24 seconds on the shot clock, not 22. Just because it's late and you think that guy's going to shoot, like, he's one of the most cerebral Rondo's one of the most cerebral players the league has ever had. Like, he will find and use every second on the clock, and you have to stay with your man throughout that entire play. You can't just stand up out of your stance because you think you shut down your guy. You can't just zone out on your guy cutting because you think he's going to shoot, you know, a guy's going to huck up a three at the end of the clock. Like, you have to be focused and stay locked in and be held accountable for what your actions do to the team.
Yeah, I think the accountability is the tightrope that Ryan Saunders and David Vanderpool and all those coaching staff, I think that's the tightrope that they need to walk. And it's a tough one because obviously, you know, as you've said, and I think as many of us believe, you have to throw him out there with the starters at some point, and you have to give him minutes to grow and minutes to, you know, play alongside good players and not be the only guy on the court who can score and not be the only guy on the court who you expect to defend it at the point of attack. But on the other hand, you also need to be able to hook him when he does something like that. You can't, like, I know you want to play through the mistakes, but you also have to teach him that this isn't Georgia anymore, where he's the best recruit in their, you know, in their history. It's not, high school anymore, where you can just score 50 and play lazy defense because you're still the best player on the team. Like, you need to, if you don't step up on defense, if you don't do what you're supposed to on defense, you will sit on the bench. Mm-hmm. And that's the tough bit, because you want to develop him and you want to try, but you're also trying to win games. And I know that right now it looks like they're tanking and the way they're playing, but I don't think guarantee you they want. Yeah, I can guarantee you they want to win games. They're not going to risk that top three pick for the sake of a few extra losses. And so I think that they need to walk that tightrope. They need to figure out the fine balance between sitting him down for his mistakes and not letting him build bad habits, but then also play through those bad habits and learn good ones. And I just think it's tough. It's tough for the coaching staff. It's tough for Edwards. Obviously, all of this stuff that we're talking about is qualified by the fact that he's played 14 NBA games. And I want to throw this to you, but I'd kind of expected a lot of this, and I expected Anthony Edwards to have a pretty bad rookie season. Like, is that how you felt as well?
Yeah, I never expected him to come out, you know, guns blazing, super efficient on both ends of the floor or anything. I figured there'd be struggles. I thought his best situation would be a role like Minnesota, like Golden State, where he wouldn't be the primary guy right away. And injuries and COVID and all that stuff has, you know, kind of forced him into more of a dominant role, because, you know, Towns has played four games only, so we haven't been really gotten to see him play off of him much. None of this really surprises me. It's not like, you know, he was some super locked in player in college every possession, and now this is like, who the hell is this guy and why isn't he, you know, locked in every second? It's just, I was hoping for more of, you know, of a progression to a professional player. And, you know, a lot of this can be given to, you know, their practice or their inability to practice, their lack of training camp, no summer league, and they had 30 days or something like that between the draft and their first game. So it's tough, but then, you know, you see other rookies figuring it out. So none of this is surprising. I think all the tools are still there. There's a lot to be excited about. I worry about how they're using him defensively. I don't think they're utilizing his athleticism enough. I'd like to see him, you know, a little bit more of like a weak ball shot blocker, but that kind of goes into his awareness and ability to recognize rotations and stuff. But I mean, like, his block percentage is 0.2%, which is in the 13th percentile, and his defensive rebounding percentage is 8%, which is in the 2nd percentile. So it's not good, but it's also not surprising.
Yeah, some of that I've been watching the rebounding lately because obviously he gets the Wiggins comparisons. He's always got that, and Wiggins, one of Wiggins' biggest issues is that he was obviously uber athletic and never there amongst the rebounds.
Yeah,
exactly. And the thing I think with Wiggins as well, it's kind of the one thing I almost gave Wiggins a pass with, and I think they're kind of using Edwards the same way, is that they don't really ask him. I guess from watching from afar, they don't really ask him to get in there on the defensive rebounds. They more have him as a guy who's leaking out on the break, and sure. I think that's how they play with Wiggins as well. I think that Saunders has kind of learnt that from Tibbs.
Yeah.
And because just like last night, he had a few, but it seemed like every time he actually went to the rim and went in for the rebound rather than leaking out and trying to get out in transition, he got a rebound, or he got close to a rebound, or he, you know, put a body on somebody. I think that I'm not sure whether the rebounding is scheme-based or whether it's just him deciding he doesn't want to go and try and get a rebound, because that wouldn't surprise me either. I don't know what I expect from him as a rebounder, but I definitely, to your point, expect him to have a higher block percentage than 0.2%. Like, even in Georgia, where he was often playing at 50%, you still saw him get plenty of blocks. Not obviously a shot blocker, but a guy who could get a lot of blocks just coming off the weak side and just making that late rotation and using his athleticism to cover ground and to get a block. So we haven't seen any of that this season. I can remember one block, I reckon, that he got, and that was a chase down block towards the start of the season. So
I guess to your rebounding point of a bit, trying to have him leak out and kind of get in that transition offense right away. I like that idea, but they don't have any elite rebounders in there to secure that ball. They have the worst defensive rebounding rate in the NBA. So,
okay, makes sense when Towns is there. It doesn't make sense when Jared Vanderbilt and Naz Reid are the guys rebounding.
Right.
Vanderbilt's been a very good rebounder, but Naz is way below average for a center.
Right, and in the preseason, Ryan was talking about how they wanted to do a lot more of just grab and go, and I can't think of a better, more athletic player to have do that than Anthony Edwards. So I think having him, and maybe it's just his mentality, maybe it's coaching instruction, I'm not sure, but for a team with the worst defensive rebounding rate in the NBA, instructing your most athletic player to leak out instead of go secure that rebound and then run in transition, I think is, you know, just kind of malpractice.
Yeah. And I think it's all being compounded by the offense. I know that we're kind of focusing on the defense right now, but I think that at his best, I know he has the physical tools, but I think for me and for you and for guys who have watched Edwards a ton, you know, from when he was breaking out in high school to obviously all of his games at Georgia, I just never expected him to be above an average defensively.
No.
Despite his physical tools. I thought like a 50th percentile defender on the wing was his peak. And then you need his offensive game, you know, in a perfect world would make up for that. There's plenty of really good wing players who are 50th percentiles as defenders, you know, Donovan Mitchell, who's the guy he gets compared to all the time. Like, I think he's there. Devin Booker's obviously not a great defender. You can get away with that if you're a really good offensive player. Mm. And I guess that's, you know, if we transition into the offense, that's why it looks so bad right now, the defense, because you can't get away with the defense when you're shooting 35% from the field.
Yeah, it's bad.
It's like, I don't know. I guess I'll ask you the same question. What have you made of Ant's offense so far, and how does it compare to what you saw heading into draft night?
Yeah, so let's start out with like a positive, and that's been his playmaking.
Yeah.
I didn't I saw very little of that at Georgia. He was kind of a black hole with the ball and looked for his shot. He didn't move off ball. It's kind of, you know, very, very different players and results, but it's kind of hard to ask when looking for his shot, not the passing part of Harden's game, and then if he gave it up, he was just kind of stagnant off on the wing. But his ability to drive and kick, I think, has been really impressive and really encouraging. I think he's only averaging like an assist a half a game or something, but I don't think that really correctly represents the types of passes he's been making when he kicks out of the drive. So from that standpoint, I'm really encouraged of what his kind of offensive game can eventually develop into. Especially when he gets
out of this funk. I think right now, the last few games, you've seen that passing decrease a little bit, but that's just because he wants to score. He just wants to watch the ball go through the hoop a few times,
right?
So
and,
badly.
And if he gets more minutes with the starters and he's kicking out to Russell or Beasley or, you know, Towns, those numbers will skyrocket because Ricky Rubio can't hit anything right now. No one from the bench can shoot at all. So
yeah,
from that standpoint, the passing was something I didn't expect and something I'm really encouraged and excited about. I thought he would be a much better interior scorer than this. His athleticism,
it just makes no sense, man. It makes no sense that he can't hit a shot around the rim. Like, that's easily the most surprising thing for me.
Yeah.
You know, compared to Georgia.
Yeah, and 41% of his shots are coming at the rim, which is in the 87th percentile. That's awesome. You want your freak athlete to attack the rim. That's something Wiggins never did. He never used his athleticism to initiate contact, to attack the rim. There's always these weird mid-range floaters or fadeaways. We're seeing less of that from Ant, and he's attacking the rim, which is awesome. The problem is he's shooting 42% at the rim, which is the 4th percentile. So, you know, yeah, we can complain about not getting foul calls. I think he's gotten pretty screwed in that end. But at the end of the day, you still have to put the ball in the hoop. And the fact that he's been unable to do that is just really kind of perplexing to me.
Yeah, it's like, it's the one thing I expect positive, you know, regression back to the mean.
Agreed.
Back to what we expected him to be, because it's always been, like you said, it's always been shot selection issues with Edwards before, you know, pre-NBA.
Yep.
And we haven't seen that really so far. Like, yeah, he's gonna stop and pop for a mid-range. I mean, in terms of just refusing almost to attack the rim.
Sure.
At Georgia, he was just so frustrating because it was even more pronounced because he could get to the ring even easier.
Yep.
And he could finish at the rim even easier because there wasn't a Rudy Gobert or, you know, a Miles Turner or someone waiting for him there.
Yeah.
And he just didn't. I do want to get to the shot selection issues because you're right, that's not a non-issue anymore. But it's just the fact that he's going to the rim and he's clearly taken the advice of what this coaching staff wants in terms of the threes and the rim shots, and they want him to get there and attack aggressively, and these shots just aren't going in. We saw it through the first five games where he was bullying, you know, 10-year vets and finishing in a variety of different ways, and now he just cannot get one to go through the twine. Like, they're rolling around the rim, they're, you know, sitting on the rim for a second and falling off. There's obviously no foul calls are coming, which, as you said, is not an excuse because you just need to finish it either way. He's looking for those foul calls now.
Yeah.
Since he came out publicly and said, I don't get foul calls.
Yeah, and that's never going to help him.
No, exactly. And you know, Karl Anthony Towns still doesn't get foul calls 5-6 years into his career because he complains too much.
Yep.
And I know Ant doesn't seem to kind of throw any hissy fits or anything, but he's trying to draw a foul while he's in the air,
mm-hmm.
rather than just trying to put the ball in the hoop. He's just pressing at the moment to see one of those bunnies go down. And every time one rolls off the rim or he gets crunched and gets no whistle, that confidence, you see it just get chipped away a little bit. It seems that his way to deal with the confidence being chipped away is to just do it again.
Mm-hmm.
like I said, with Culver before. Culver will go into his shell. If Culver misses five threes, he won't shoot for two games. If Ant misses five threes, he's coming down the court the next play and jacking up a three from 27 feet because he needs to see one go down. And we saw last night he you know, obviously missed, I don't know, 10 shots straight to start the game. And then he hits a layup, next play down, comes off the pick and roll, hits a pull-up three. Like, he is full-on a confidence player.
Yep.
And when they start going in, he it's the Michigan State game. Like, I can see one of them games happening at some point where he's going to hit eight straight shots in a game and he's going to look absolutely unbelievable. But then he needs to figure out a way to balance those hot streaks with these extra cold streaks.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's a chance that he just can't finish around the rim sufficiently at the NBA level, or is it just a funk? Like, do you see any way that this doesn't at least sort itself out to at least league average?
And there's always that possibility that he's just one of these guys who just doesn't have any touch and can't figure out the angles at the rim. I don't think that'll be the case. You kind of mentioned it earlier. I think it's currently more so that he's more concerned about trying to get the foul call than trying to score, which I think is a big issue. And, you know, especially with the kind of culture and obsession with foul hunting now, with guys running through screens or stopping in the middle of the lane,
The Trae Young complex.
Right, the Trae Young. We saw Kevin Durant, you know, back in the day when he would just do the rip through. James Harden stopping right off of a screen, all that stuff. So I think he's more worried about initiating contact, and which I like that he's initiating contact. I like that he's not shy about that, because that's where, like, the Wiggins comp completely veers off, because Wiggins was so averse to contact and never used his athleticism. Anthony Edwards wants to show you his athleticism and throw it in your face.
Man, he almost threw down one of the biggest dunks of all time last night.
I think there are two of them. One, he got stuffed by the rim. The other, Capella hit, stiff-armed him in the chest, and apparently that's clean now. I think once he's going to have to change his mindset of, okay, I'm looking to score here. If I get a foul call, awesome. But I can't expect to get one because he's not getting them. And, you know, NBA refs, you know, I don't think it's deliberate, but, you know, subconsciously they have this 18, 19-year-old kid complaining about how they don't give him any calls, and he thinks he gets fouled all the time.
And they're just they're just like, who are you?
Right,
who are you?
Right,
like,
you've done nothing in this league. So
Yeah, I think that's completely spot on. He has to just go and fit. And I think that's what he was doing in the first five games. I mean, I wrote a film room piece about how well he finishes at the rim and how well he gets to the rim. Like, I don't think that, like, something happened. He had a few bad games, and then he's just, as I said, he's just pressing way too hard. I think it's worth mentioning, and it needs to be mentioned, that I don't think they use him well at all on offense. Defensively, you can kind of give the coaching staff a pass just because Ant's not doing himself any favors by just being poor pretty much all around. Mm-hmm. But I think offensively, like, you have to run more stuff to get Ant downhill.
Yeah.
And that isn't just a high pick and roll with everyone else standing around doing nothing. And, you know, so clearly pretty much in isolation with a high screen there.
Yep.
I know they run some wide pin down actions for him, the same ones they run for Malik Beasley. But you just have to get a little bit more creative, I think, if you want to keep that confidence high, because he's not Malik Beasley, who has proven to be an awesome shooter. And when Beasley comes off those wide pin downs, they take one closer step towards the 3-point shot,
mm-hmm.
and that allows Beasley to drive if he needs to. And they'll let him shoot a three coming off a pin down. They don't want him to drive, and they, you know, stop him from that drive. And you've got to encourage and enforce more back cuts, more dives to the rim from any position from Ant, which is on him as well. I thought he was a really good back cutter at Georgia. He didn't do it
as often as
you'd like.
He just never did it.
Yeah, but I remember one or two, maybe. I think I looked on Synergy last night. I think Ant has 8 cutting possessions this year that ended in a scoring possession. So that is just wild to me.
Yeah,
10 cutting possessions. He scored 9 points off those possessions. So he's in the 9th percentile, 0.9 points per shot attempt. So I think even if he's not finishing well, which clearly he's not compared to, you know, if the numbers are telling the truth, but you need to make him do it more.
Right.
Especially when he's going to be sitting in the corner for a lot of the game. I think you need to play him as a screener and let him roll to the rim. That's another way to just get him going downhill without the ball in his hands and have Russell feed him, or have Ricky Rubio, when he's out there with that second unit, feed him on a pick and roll, pretty much. It might not work, but it's better than high pick and rolls all the time. It's better than wide pin downs that aren't working. And then, hell, I'd even post him up when he's on a smaller guard. Mm-hmm. Like, smaller dudes guard him because they know that he's going to sit in the corner for a lot of the game. I just think you need to try more things with Edwards rather than just beating pick and rolls and isolations to death. Like, that's not doing him any favors.
No, and it's like, I think it was like 6 or 7 games ago, I forget which one exactly, but they started running, when he was in that second unit, they started running that, they'd start him off in the right corner, he would circle up, Rubio would do a dribble handoff with him, and he would go straight into a Naz Reid pick and roll right in the middle of the floor, and they did it like 3 or 4 times in a row to end the first quarter, and, you know, Edwards either set up Naz for an open dunk or pulled up for a wide open mid-range jumper that he nailed, and you know they scored every time on that. But then every game since then, they've been running it 3, 4, 5, 6 times a game with no variation to it. So you know defenses are just going under the handoff, going under the screen, and now Edwards is just pounding the ball at the top of the key with no plan, because there's no other movement or action or options for him to do something off of that. So it's too simplistic. It's not, you know, next time they run that, I would love to see him, you know, fake the handoff and instead cut back door. But, you know, that's tough because defenses are going under everything. So, you know, defenders just could be 3 feet off of him, and oh, okay, this was easy to go with. So that, you know,
and that's the problem with the whole offense right now, is that there's no counters to anything. It's just like weave action, you know.
Yeah, I'm so sick of that 10-second weave where they do nothing except just, all right, well, you ran in circles for 15 seconds, now you got 10 seconds and the ball and no one's moving. So awesome.
Yeah, and then they just run a high pick and roll to finish it with 5 seconds on the clock, yeah. and it goes nowhere. Like, when he comes off that handoff, you know, action with Naz, like, then you run the wide pin down on the other side of the floor for Beasley. Like, give him an option to pass to. Let him use a little bit of that passing, or just make the defense look somewhere else. Because when you just run that handoff into pick and roll, and no one else moves, everyone knows what's going to happen, and everyone's already clued into the fact that Edwards likes the look of his own shot,
mm-hmm.
and that when he gets the ball, he wants to shoot and he wants to impress.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that you have to make teams look at someone else on those plays, because obviously, you know, we're not absolving Ant of any blame here.
No.
Because he needs to be better, you know, in multiple areas offensively, obviously. But I just think you're doing him no favors. And the more you try and just make him become better at these bad actions, like the worse it's making him. And then I think after that you have to factor into things, you know, that aren't on the coaching staff. And I think that's, like you said earlier, it's the shot selection issues. And they're not pull up mid range shots like Wiggins, but they're the three point shots, the pull up threes. I mean, he's shooting 38.2% on 34 catch and shoot jumpers so far.
Yeah, well,
which is very
his pull up threes are 16.7%.
Yeah, and those catch and shoots just don't come very often. 34 surprised me, because that seemed like too many, to be honest. Because the dude can shoot. I'm going to stand by that he can shoot. I don't think he's Culver. I don't think he's Rubio.
No.
I think that he's a guy who can he can at least shoot at a league average rate from three, but his problem is that he boxes himself into a corner by constantly attempting these low percentage looks that, you know, even Steph Curry's not shooting a high percentage, maybe Steph, but, you know, like players don't shoot high percentage from three if they shoot bad shots all the time. And that's what's wrong with Edwards, the decision-making, I think. It's this, those sidestep triples.
Cut those out of every game because those drive me insane. Yeah. Because defenders fly past him on the closeouts, attack the rim, stop doing this one dribble sidestep for a three that clangs off the side of the rim.
And it's that long pump fake that he has too, which it does work. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like lull you to sleep. But like they're so long that he could have just shot the catch and shoot jumper.
Yeah.
Like, there's two options. You just shoot the semi-open jumper, and we know you can hit him. I'm sure the coaching staff trusts him to hit him. Or if you do get the guy to fly by, yeah, you attack the rim, and it's a broken floor. Someone's going to come and help. Someone's open. We know that you can make these drive and kick passes. Like, that's the exact situation I want to see him getting downhill, is when it's a 4-on-5 situation.
Yeah.
And now you've got an open guy somewhere. And even if those shots don't go in, like we said, even if it's Rubio, if it's Culver that you end up passing to, at least you've made the right play. And the sidestep jumper is not the right play. I've said before on this podcast that I think that he is such a great space creator, and he always has been. He's got crazy space creation on just like a single jab step, just because his first step is so quick and players are wary of getting blown by. And those side steps, like, he creates a ton of space off those side steps, but I think he just wants to show that. Like, he wants to prove how well he can create space and create shots. And sometimes, you know, especially in the NBA, especially when you're shooting 35% from the field, like, you just got to take the easy option, not the flashy option, not the, you know, off the dribble, crazy looking jumper that you can knock down. We know you can knock them down, but you're not going to knock them down often. And I think that's the problem with Edwards right now.
Yeah, and just I think just getting him more stuff where, you know, if you're going to set him up in the corner and run a pick and roll or something on the opposite side of the floor, okay, but then maybe have someone set him a back pick or something so he can, you know, flash to the rim, or, you know, run actual plays for him off ball to, you know, to free him up and get to the rim. It's just too much of, okay, dribble handoff, pick and roll, no options, okay, we're going to take a step back three. It's like, and he's got to be better out of those situations of recognizing that, okay, I don't have something here. I got to move the ball and relocate. I got to cut off ball. You know, Rubio's being hard-hedged and, you know, I have a chance to cut back door here. Just his effort off the ball needs to improve, and We've seen enough ability from him in that area where we know it's there. We know it. He can do it. It's just a matter of getting him to actually do it.
The perfect example is that dunk that he had in the Orlando game, I think it was, where he drove the seam, he kicked to the corner, he didn't force anything, and then as soon as he kicked to the corner, he relocated into the slot next to the guy in the corner, pump faked the closing out defender, and then dunked on someone. Like, that is the perfect Anthony Edwards play. Attack the closeout once, make the right pass, don't force the shot, relocate smartly, and then attack the closeout again and yam it on someone. Like, if he could do that, you know, he can do that three times a game. Like, and we've seen it once for a season. Like, as much as I think that the coaching staff needs to do a better job of, like, he's got a 26.3% usage rate, like, and they don't run a play for him. Like, they don't run anything but high pick and roll for him.
Right.
Like, that needs to change. He's getting a usage rate of a star at the moment. Obviously, it's a star, you know, it's a bench role where he's kind of the guy who they want leading the bench as a six-man type. But, like, you can't just, like, the dude's played 14 games in the NBA, 15 by the time people are listening to this. You can't just throw him out there and, you know, not give him any direction and just be like, yeah, we know you can score in isolation, go do it. Like,
right. So among his position, he's in the 85th percentile for usage rate, and his total points per 100 shot attempts is 80, which is in the 5th percentile. It's, you know, some of that's on him. You know, don't take these step backs, you know, look to score at the rim, not to draw a foul. But a lot of it's just they don't have a plan for him. Like you said, it's just throw him out there. All right, here's one action. Nothing came of it. Figure it out.
Yeah, it's honestly it's really frustrating, and I think that's just a perfect, you know, recipe for disaster of bad coaching and bad shot selection. And he, it's to your, a point you made a lot earlier. I think the guys that we're seeing come out of the gates really fast as the rookies are the guys who are just known as cerebral players, guys whose IQ has always been a high point of theirs. You know, Tyrese Halliburton, LaMelo Ball, like they're guys who can read the game three steps ahead and always have been able to. So they've been able to adjust without summer league and without a full training camp. And I think that the guys that we were high on, or at least high-ish on, who weren't high IQ guys but more, you know, project guys or guys who overwhelm with athleticism or with just raw talent, guys like Edwards, guys like Danny Avdija. I know he is a high IQ player and he hasn't been horrible, but you obviously on the Avdija train, you know, more than anyone. And I think he's struggled a little bit just because it's hard to adjust, you know, to the NBA game after 14 games and no offseason. And I think we both know that. But also, if you don't improve that IQ and you don't learn on the job pretty quickly, like, it's going to get away from you. You know what I mean? It's going to, you don't, you're obvious, like, obviously Edwards is going to have all the chances in the world to become good. Then he's never going to be a guy they just sit on the bench, or at least not now. But I just think that you can't let bad habits seep into your game and get to the point where you can't get rid of them. And I'm worried that that's going to happen with Edwards. I'm not as worried as some. I know some are writing him off pretty early, and for a guy, like we said earlier, like we both expected him to struggle. So I'm not surprised that he's struggling. And I've said that multiple times, but I just think his mental makeup and his penchants for falling in love with that jumper, I think it's not a great sign. And I think the coaching staff need to do a better job of getting him over. Because once I think he's the kind of guy that if you get him open and catch and shoot looks and he starts knocking them down, he'll become more receptive to the idea of doing it all the time.
Right.
Like, he wants to ball out. Like, he just wants to be really good. And if you show him that these smarter ways to be really good work, he'll start doing them. But right now, he's just like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to do what I'm going to do what I've always done.
And that kind of circles back to what we were talking about with his confidence before, where it's not that Jared Culver, you know, scenario where he misses shots and he gets in his own head and freaks out. But I am concerned about, I'm not concerned about him lacking confidence and believing that what he's going to do is going to work. I am worried about him being overly confident and the bad things he's doing not bothering him enough, where it's like, I need to fix this and get this out of my game and morph it into this, which is more conducive to winning basketball and will help me as a player and help the team. So that's more where I'm worried about his, you know, his confidence level, where it's overly confident and not self-aware enough, where it's, this is broken, I need to change this.
Yeah, it's more, the worry is that it's more, this has worked for me before, so I'll just make it work for me again. Yeah. Rather than, you know, this isn't going to work because this is the NBA now, and it's not Georgia.
Right.
It's not, you know, we're not versing a team that's not even in the top 50 teams in college basketball. Like, this is the NBA, and every night you'll just get punished if you do the wrong things. And we saw it, you know, last night, Clint Capela feels like Clint Capela blocked him about 17 times. And that's going to be hard on the mentality, but also it's good. And a lot of those, I think, were because he wanted the foul, like we said, and he's looking at the ref almost midair saying, you know, call this foul. Like, I think that the fact that he came out early and just tried to dunk on everyone.
Yeah.
I think they need to tell him that that's the right thing, because the first one, he gets blocked by the rim and he hit the, you know, he dunks that 99 times out of 100 probably.
Yeah.
The second was overly ambitious, but fun nonetheless.
Yeah.
All right. We'll leave it there on Edwards. I think obviously there's a lot to unpack still with him, and we will be able to unpack it again as the season wears on, and I'm sure that we will come on and talk about him again. Yep. I want to finish off the show with Jaden McDaniels. Obviously, tiny sample size, barely, I think, two games now, probably three, when you guys are listening, but of actual rotation minutes and not just garbage time minutes. But for the season, he's averaging 4.8 points per game, 2.8 rebounds, 0.6 blocks, 42.4% from the field, 41.2% from three. Ridiculously small sample size on and off numbers here. 3.4 points per 100 possessions worse on offense, and 23.5 points per 100 possessions better on defense when he's on the floor. You had him at 27 pre-draft. I had him at 28, which I think he ended up going 27 or 28, I think. Whatever. So we're pretty close on that. Again, I'll ask you the same question. What have you seen from McDaniels that stands out for you or worries you compared to what you saw coming out of college?
Yeah, so and he was so disappointing at Washington, and you know, he looked immature there. You know, he had a lot of issues with that, I don't know specifically, but it sounded like he had some issues off the court with the team or whatever. He had a ton of technical fouls. He got in foul trouble all the time. He looked disinterested. He looked frustrated, and I'd not really seen that player at all. And what we saw in the Orlando game, I thought was incredibly encouraging and something I didn't expect to see from him, you know, maybe for like another year or two. And it was a breakout game in the sense that, you know, and it was an awesome game for him, but it wasn't, you know, one of those games where he's chucking up a bunch of contested shots and everything's just going in, you know, where it's balls just bouncing his way on both ends of the floor.
It seemed like something that you could do, that he could replicate.
Right.
It didn't seem like a hot night.
Right. It was decision-making. It was positioning. It was making the right read, making the right rotation, timing, you know, incredible timing on his block shots. It was really encouraging and a lot of fun, and it just really seemed like Washington was just kind of drained him. He was fun. You know, maybe that's the best game of the season for him. It very well could be. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's just a sign of things to come. And even if it is his best game, I don't think that's a problem. You know, I think he showed that he has the defense and the shooting ability and the IQ and the willingness to kind of battle more than I ever expected to see from him. That should earn him minutes. You know, he is still really skinny, but he looks like he's added muscle since Washington, which he didn't do at Washington at all. So, you know, if he I hope he continues to get minutes, because I think that'll be good for his development. And, you know, the Timberwolves haven't been able to get any production from the four. You know, Vanderbilt's been awesome, but he's an absolute liability late in games and can't stay out of foul trouble.
He's a five. I think Vanderbilt's a five. Like, and they obviously are playing him at the four. I think they probably will continue to run him at the four when Cat's back as well. But I just feel like he's a small ball five kind of guy who plays a bit bigger.
Right, but in the final 5 minutes, you can't play him.
No, you can't. You can't. And we learned that the hard way.
Right. And I really like Vanderbilt, so I'm not trying to take air shots at him.
I'm the president of the Vanderbilt fan club. Yeah. So
what McDaniels showed was really encouraging. I think, you know, when we were going through players or pre-draft stuff, you know, we both kind of saw him as a lottery ticket and a more of a development project. I don't think he's going to be as much of a development project as, you know, we kind of all originally thought. And, you know, I kind of hope that he played himself out of being sent to that G League bubble, because I would like to see him stay with the team and practice with the team and get minutes in games that aren't just garbage time. So hopefully that's the case. You know, again, minuscule sample size. I mean, Cleaning the Glass has him at 61 minutes on the season, and they take out all garbage time stuff, so he's barely played anything meaningful. But that Magic game was awesome.
Yeah, And what encouraged me even more so was the quiet night against Atlanta last night. And I just thought he just does all the little things and he doesn't seem to want to do more than that. And that's something that he didn't do at Washington. Right. He always pressed and he always took, you know, silly, especially when he got in his own head and he was emotional about the game or just, you know, losing and not getting minutes, started coming off the bench for the second half of the season. I just think so far he's shot the ball when he's open, he's moved the ball when he isn't, and then he impacts the game as a rotation defender who covers immense ground to block and to alter shots. Like, there isn't much to say outside of that on him so far, and that's a good thing because he isn't doing anything that you don't want him to do. He's taken a few pull-up mid-range jumpers, but that's after attacking a closeout. You know, he's struggled to finish a little bit at the rim, but, like, they're all things that, you know, they're not issues, really. They're just things that rookies who, you know, weigh a $1.50, that's what happens with them. So I just think the fact that he's just playing under control is a huge step from what we saw at Washington, and I think he's lucked out in the situation that he's in. They can't put him in the G League bubble, surely, because right now, like, you have to roll with him over Hernan Gomez and over Lehman. Like, I just don't see any reason why you can put him back on the bench, especially if he's hitting these threes. He probably needs a good night tonight against the Pelicans to kind of cement himself just as a guy who can hit threes. He probably just needs to hit one or two threes tonight if he gets open for them, because Saunders and Rosas clearly want Hernan Gomez to work. So
which I get, because they just gave him an obscene amount of money for what he's producing. And, you know, and I would love for Hernan Gomez to, you know, either be off the team or find what he did, you know, post-trade deadline last season. I would love for that to work, but it's really looking like it's not going to. And it just looks like a really, really bad signing. And, like, the Timberwolves' two biggest contributors at the four spot could be McDaniels and Vanderbilt, who are both making less than $2 million.
I think they need to look at it. I've been thinking this recently, and I don't know if I'll put it out there. I think they need to look at Hernan Gomez not playing and McDaniels and Vanderbilt playing. As, you know, you can just spin that into a win. Spin that into the fact that you traded for a 21-year-old who's a restricted free agent, who's under your control, mm-hmm. who is clear, like, in Vanderbilt, who's clearly a rotation player and can be a part of a core, you know, going into the future. And then you drafted McDaniels at 28, who looks like he can play and looks like he can immediately be a part of a rotation. I think that's the way they should be looking at it, rather than we gave Hernan Gomez $21 million and he's not playing.
Yeah.
You know, like, look at it the other way, where the guys who are outplaying him
are future pieces.
Like, I wanted to get your opinion before I let you go on McDaniels' on-ball defense. I know we haven't seen much of anything from him, just sample size wise, but we got to see nothing at Washington. Like, I remember looking for on ball defense clips when I was writing my article. You know, I reckon I found two for the whole season.
It's like, the worst zone in the country, and they get destroyed. Yeah. And I don't know why they play it.
Yeah, so obviously Mike Hopkins at Washington, they run that constant zone, and I've actually been pretty impressed with how he's been able to move his feet and then use his length to kind of recover on quicker guys. Like, he, even when he's a step or two behind, he gets a hand up in their face just because his arms are so long.
Yeah.
And he can't get through screens. I mean, he's been obliterated by a couple of screens so far. But, like, the dude's a beanpole, and that's kind of to be expected. But that stuff you can improve, you know, in the weight room for a few off seasons and plenty of time with David Vanterpool exploring how to, you know, navigate bigger bodies and do it with more success. But I just think that I always imagined, I guess just because I had no sample of it, that he was going to be really bad as an on-ball defender. And I've been quietly encouraged there.
Yeah, and I think it kind of, that his shot-blocking instincts and timing around the rim kind of transfers to his on-ball defense as well, and he's moved his feet a lot better than I expected. Offensively, we can see kind of how quick he is, and that translates as well. He gets down in his stance, he moves his feet pretty well. I don't think he'll ever be, you know, a great defender, but
yeah,
he clearly takes it seriously. and I mean his arm's gone forever, and he absolutely uses his length. And like that steal against Orlando where he got switched on to Aaron Gordon at the top of the arc, and Gordon tried to take him off the dribble, and McDaniels, you know,
and he Gordon was swaying back and forth with those crossovers. Like, Gordon was licking his lips when he saw McDaniels switched onto him.
Yeah, and McDaniels did a good job of moving his feet. He flipped his hips, he poked the ball loose, and then got out and ran in transition. You know, I don't expect that every time. I'm sure he's gonna, those long legs are gonna get tangled up a couple times this year, but the fact that he seems to take pride in his defense, which is something I didn't fully anticipate. I knew that he loved to be that shot blocker and had an attitude about it at Washington where he loved swatting guys' shots into the fifth row and would let them know about it. So that didn't surprise me. But his on-ball stuff, I mean, he takes it just as seriously as that weak side shot blocking. And just his overall defensive awareness, where before he's making that rotation, he's glancing over his shoulder to see his guy, to make sure that he's not cutting behind him, to make sure that he's not rotating for an open three or something. And then once he knows where that guy is, you know, then he's helping. So he's much more cerebral on defense than I initially expected. And because off the bat, I assumed that he would just be all arms and length, and kind of no grit, and that hasn't been the case at all.
It's a strange one, and this is gonna sound over the top, but he kind of reminds me of like a Robert Covington type, obviously without the IQ. Like, Cov's IQ is off the charts defensively, but like Cov has never been a guy who's a great on-ball defender. Mm-hmm. He gets blown by regularly, still in Portland and did in Minnesota. Like, he's just not a guy that defends at the point of attack, you know, at a supreme level. He's fine at it, and you can survive with Robert Covington on a good player, but it's the way he's just a defensive playmaker in all forms. And I kind of see that a little bit with McDaniels, where he just seems to read when he can impact a shot or when he can poke a ball away. Like, it's not that you can just stick him on Paul George and say, get at it. Like, it's not Josh Okogie, who doesn't get a lot of blocks and he doesn't get a lot of steals, right, but he forces bad shots. I don't think McDaniels will ever force bad shots, but what he does is just, he covers so much ground, man. Mm-hmm. Like, he's in the corner, and then all of a sudden he's blocking you from behind at the rim from 3 feet away. Like, and he did that at Washington as well. I always just thought that he had a role in the NBA if he could knock down threes, because I thought that he'd just be a fine rotation defender, weak side defender.
Yeah.
And I guess the last thing I want to hit on here is what do you think of this 3-point shooting? Is it a mirage? I don't think he's a 40% shooter.
No.
I mean, I thought he was always a great, you know, really good catch and shoot guy at Washington, and a bit like Edwards, kind of ruined his percentages with his shot selection at times. But like, if he stands there and shoot and catch and shoot shots as his main source of scoring, what do you think the percentages are going to average out to?
I think he'll be at least a league average shooter from outside. And 41% on two attempts a game, I don't think is something people should expect to continue. I think
I'd like to see the attempts go up and the percentage probably go down.
Yeah, and I would guess by the end of the season that he kind of averages out to 35-ish, maybe 36%. But you know, that's kind of all you need. I think that's good enough, because it's never going to be, you know, 33 to 35% on high volume. It's going to be 35 to 37% on open catch and shoots, and you know, he knocks down a couple, and then that forces defenses to close out a little more aggressively, and he's shown that he can take guys off the dribble, or at least attack a closeout for, you know, a two dribble pull up in the mid range, and just his length and high release point makes his shot nearly impossible to block. So I think he'll be a solid shooter. I don't think he'll be awesome or, you know, world-changing or anything like that. But I absolutely expect him to be a respectable shooter that defenses can't just completely ignore.
And right now, that's probably the best power forward on the roster.
Yeah,
like, obviously, Vanderbilt is probably a little bit more valuable just because he is quite a good defender and an elite rebounder. But like a 3 and D is his role right now, McDaniels. Mm-hmm. Like if he can shoot open threes and make an impact defensively, that's more than a lot of the guys on this roster are doing right now.
Yeah, because Jake Lehman is completely fallen out of the rotation. The team can't rebound at all when Okogie's at the four. You know, I like that lineup for spurts, but it's proven pretty disastrous at the end of games. And, you know, Vanderbilt's an offensive liability, and Hernan Gomez is sagging off of three-point shooters by 10 feet because he doesn't want to get blown past, and he can't knock down a shot to save his
doesn't
life.
Doesn't want to get blown past by Kyle Anderson.
Right, which is... beyond puzzling. So a guy named Slow-Mo, he's is embarrassing him athletically.
I think that McDaniels has actually been a pretty good rebounder. I thought he was a pretty good rebounder at Washington as well.
Yeah.
I actually was always pleasantly surprised with how often he sought out a body.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's willing to box out.
He looks for a body and turns and, you know, makes contact. He's skinny, and usually those guys are, you know, I don't want to go bang in the post, but he hasn't been shy about getting physical. He's going to get pushed out of the way, but he kind of held his own against Birch and Vucevic, sort of.
They're big dudes.
Yeah, they're really big, and they usually push guys around, but he would get pushed, and he would go right back and try and hold his own, which was, you know, it's part of that grit and that effort and willingness to do those little things that I didn't really expect to see from him maybe ever, especially not this early in his career.
He's got a mentality that I like. It's kind of like the Beasley mentality where he's not strong enough to overpower dudes, but like he's got a little bit of an edge to him. Like, we obviously saw that, you know, it got directed the wrong way.
Yep.
At Washington, and usually towards the ref or towards his own team, just because he was clearly frustrated. But when he's taking it out, like you said, when he's blocking dudes and he's talking trash after it, or when a big dude comes and tries to throw him out the way on a box out, and he says, you know what, like, I'm going to go right back at you.
Right.
Even if you do throw me out the way, I'm going to make sure that you have to work for it.
Right, and that's
impressive.
Something this team doesn't have in the post, really.
Yeah.
They don't have any toughness.
And that gives you 10 more pounds, you know,
right.
Like, just in, like, wanting to do it. You can be as big as you want. I mean, we've seen it a little bit with Edwards. Like, you don't see Edwards go and just try and move guys out the way, even though he could, and he's probably weighs 40 pounds more than McDaniels.
Yep.
Like, but McDaniels he's got that little bit of an edge to him. He's the kind of guy I could see to coming off the bench if a fight broke out. Like,
yeah.
I think that McDaniels, he has that edge that sometimes you want to tone down and other times it shows itself in good ways. So I think overall, you know, fairly impressed with McDaniels. And like you said, and I thought it was a great point, that like that Orlando game might be his best game of the season. I don't think we can judge him as that being the baseline. But to just see that against the physical front court, against a team that actually plays really good defense, Orlando,
mm-hmm.
despite being horrible offensively, I just think that is a hugely encouraging sign, because same as you, I didn't expect to see that for 2 years. I didn't expect him to play 1 minute in the NBA this season, and obviously injuries dictated that, but he stepped in and looks comfortable and probably earned himself a nightly role.
You'd certainly hope so. I have no idea what's going on with these rotations, but...
yeah, everyone played last night.
But,
so.
Right, and the coaching staff is just begging for someone to step up, and you know, he did against Orlando. Atlanta was a little quieter. We'll see. You know, I hope that he continues to take full advantage of the minutes he gets, because he's going to have to, because this organization isn't going to want to play him over the guy they just paid $7 million a year for in free agency. So they're going to want to play that other guy to prove his worth and try and at least engender some trade value. And McDaniels is going to have to take whatever role he gets, and where whatever minutes he gets, he's going to have to take it and take full advantage of it and kind of take over that rotation and make it impossible for the coaches not to play him.
Yeah, I completely agree. We'll leave it at that. Everyone, you can follow Tyler on Twitter at tmetcalf11. You can find all his work at Candace Hoopers and at Hashtag Basketball. Very good draft stuff. Very good just rookie breakdowns throughout the season, and just very good basketball, you know, Timberwolves stuff in general. So thanks, as usual, Tyler. And I'm sure we'll get back and give these guys another review further into the season.
Sounds good, Jake. Thanks for having me.